Hello, I'm Richard McLean-Smith, the creator of Unexplained, and I'm extremely excited to finally be able to announce the upcoming publication of my book for the US and Canada, featuring 10 new real-life events from around the world that continue to evade explanation. Each chapter goes deeper than I have on the podcast into not just the story itself, but the science, theory, and philosophy we can learn from it. What can an apparent demonic possession teach us about free will? What can the case of a poltergeist tell us about the human need to tell stories? And what can a haunted box tell us about how we construct reality? Publishing on October 1st, 2019, you can pre-order your copy of Unexplained from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and IndieBound. And keep an eye out on my website, Twitter, and Facebook feeds for more exciting announcements. Welcome to Unexplained Extra with me, Richard McLean-Smith, where for the weeks in between episodes, we look at stories and ideas that for one reason or other didn't make it into the previous show. In last week's episode, The Creeping, Esther Cox, a young woman living in the town of Amherst, Nova Scotia, found herself at the centre of a series of peculiar and terrifying events. For some, these events, which would collectively become known as the Great Amherst Mystery, are among the most convincing examples of a poltergeist haunting ever recorded. For many others, these strange events, despite apparently being witnessed by a number of credible individuals, had merely been concocted by Esther and possibly others in her family. As many will know, one interpretation of the apparent poltergeist phenomenon is to consider such things as excitable, often malicious entities with an agency of their own. Esther Cox herself claimed that the moving objects, loud bangs and fires that broke out around her, were caused by ghosts. Another interpretation of the apparent poltergeist, however, is the belief that its supposed manifestations are in fact the result of psychokinetic power. As a lover of science fiction, in particular Brian De Palma's thrilling 1978 classic, The Fury, it is this interpretation that I find personally most interesting. The notion of psychokinetic powers, or having the ability to affect objects and systems with the power of the mind alone, has been around for many years. Even as far back as 400 BCE, Shakuni, a character from the Sanskrit epic Mahabharata, was depicted manipulating dice, using only his will to do so. More recently, characters in stories that possess psychokinetic powers, similar to those supposedly displayed by Esther Cox, have often been, though not exclusively, young women or teenage girls. From Jean Grey in X-Men, to Stephen King's Carrie, and more recently the character Eleven in Stranger Things, this trope is often laden with a variety of complex and stereotypical implications, from being pejorative depictions of women as hysterical and unable to control their emotions, to being expressions of a male fear of powerful and vengeful girls and women. Such sexist underpinnings are also often found in the literature of psychical research, where adherence to the idea that poltergeists are indeed the result of psychokinesis have tended to favour the view that adolescent girls were the most likely culprits. With parapsychology, like most industries, being largely male-dominated, such a perspective is unsurprising. That said, if such powers were to manifest as the consequence of years of trauma, or as in Esther Cox's case, as a reaction to a horrific assault, it wouldn't be surprising that women and girls would be the more likely of the cisgenders to develop them. In any case, whether you believe in the possibility of such powers or not, the idea that humans could have the potential to exert psychokinesis remains a potent one. Incredibly, it is also one that has not only been confined to art and parapsychology. It was back in the early autumn of 1977 that a student approached Professor Robert Jahn, then Dean of America's Princeton School of Engineering and Applied Science, with an unusual request. A few days earlier, Jahn had informed his students that a large part of that year's grade would be apportioned to a project of their own devising. While most students had no trouble getting their projects accepted, the student in question had approached a number of professors to supervise her, but all had refused, declaring her idea to be nothing but pseudoscience. The idea was to attempt a replication of an infamous psychokinesis experiment first devised by German physicist and parapsychologist Helmut Schmidt in the 1960s. Schmidt had come to prominence with the outlandish claim that he'd found evidence of the mind's power to manipulate the outcome of a random event generator. Although they come in many guises, a random event generator, or random number generator, is, as the name suggests, a machine designed to generate a random series of events, or numbers, in order to create results that cannot be predicted. A basic version of this would be the rolling of a dice, for example, or tossing of a coin. Such machines are invaluable in the study of statistics, among many other applications. Schmidt, however, was the first to use the machines to test for signs of psychokinesis. In one of his more famous experiments, Schmidt used a device that emitted one red and one green light in a random sequence. Participants were examined to see if they were able to use their minds alone to make one light up more times than the other. According to Schmidt, it was found that on average, participants were able to influence results to the minute but noticeable degree of 2% deviation from chance. However, Schmidt's apparent results had never been replicated, a vital necessity for something to be accepted scientifically. Jahn's student wanted to see if they could replicate it. Seeing no reason to prevent them, provided they approached the experiment with all the rigour of any other experiment, Jahn granted them permission to do it. After all, a negative result, as he expected the outcome to be, would be as valuable, if not quite as earth-shattering, as finding a positive result. So it was with some surprise that Jahn's student claimed to have replicated Schmidt's original findings. Jahn was in fact so impressed by the results, he decided to set up an entire lab dedicated to similar investigations. And so in 1979, in a small cramped basement room of Princeton's engineering building, the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab, or PEAR for short, was created. There are over 2 million burglaries reported in the US every year. That's one every 13 seconds. But surprisingly, only one in five homes have home security, and it's easy to understand why. It seems expensive, it's too much hassle, it's just another thing to have to worry about. That's why SimpliSafe is different. SimpliSafe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door, with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. And they make it easy on you. No contract, hidden fees, or fine print. For just $15 a month, you can get around-the-clock monitoring that is designed to blend right into your home with no wires and no drilling. No wonder it's won a ton of awards from the likes of CNET and the New York Times' Wirecutter. Visit simplisafe.com/unexplainedpodcast and get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial today. That's Simply, spelt SimpliSafe.com/unexplainedpodcast. Robert Jahn had first attended Princeton as a student, completing first a degree in engineering physics in 1951, and then his physics PhD in 1955. Jahn would go on to join the faculty in 1962. It was soon after that that Jahn established the Electric Propulsion and Plasma Dynamics Laboratory, with which he oversaw a number of major research programs developing aerospace propulsion systems in cooperation with NASA and the US Air Force. In fact, much of what Jahn helped develop continues to power spacecraft today. But what Jahn was most interested in was consciousness. Though well aware that studying the potential for psychokinesis was at best a fringe science, and at worst, utter nonsense, since the existence of it would break a number of accepted laws of the universe, he reasoned that if such a thing were to be investigated, he could at least provide the best laboratory conditions to do it. For almost 30 years, under the guidance of lab manager Brenda Dunn, the Pear Laboratory investigated primarily mind-machine interactions and precognitive remote viewing. A typical experiment for psychokinesis would involve a participant being asked to stare at a random number generator and to think high or low to influence the result. For remote viewing, participants might be sent to a remote but distinct location and told to think about the characteristics of the place, while another participant in a different location was tested to see if they could pick up anything about where this other person was situated. In investigating the possibility of psychokinesis, the researchers would look constantly to see if their results were non-Gaussian. A Gaussian curve, named after mathematician Carl Friedrich Gauss, details the average distribution of statistical information that you would ordinarily expect to find in any given experiment. Anything contravening that would suggest that something unusual was actively affecting the result. Often, according to Jan and others at the Pear Laboratory, their experiments did exactly that, supposedly revealing that thoughts alone could physically alter the results of the random event generators. Critics, however, have pointed out that their results would often only deviate from the norm by a few percent, sometimes as little as 0.02%. Such results would fall significantly below the usual margin of error demanded in similar experiments in order to be certain that they weren't just statistical flukes. As others have pointed out, it may also be the case that there is no such thing as a truly random event generator. But more fundamentally, even their most seemingly impressive findings failed to be replicated elsewhere, and as such, none of their results achieved peer review, since most considered the sheer notion of the Pear Lab's work to be inconsistent with what are widely considered to be firmly established laws. For most science labs, successful negotiating of the peer review process is what maintains their funding. The Pear Lab was funded by private investment. It is also worth noting that despite containing the word Princeton, the Pear Lab was only nominally associated with the university, who, along with most of their affiliated scientists, are thought to have been deeply embarrassed by the connection. In 2007, with funds dwindling and their state-of-the-art equipment no longer quite what it used to be, the Pear Lab closed its doors for good. Professor Jan, who died in 2017, stood by everything they claimed to have discovered. Often, when we think of the idea of psychokinetic power, we imagine some kind of force being generated by our minds, something that can manipulate gravitational or electromagnetic fields, perhaps, that can then in turn interact with the atoms or molecules of the space around us. Many are seduced into the prospect of it by the often repeated myth that we only use 10% of our brains, the implication being that if only we could exploit the other 90%, who knows what powers we might uncover. In reality, as neurologist Barry Gordon of Johns Hopkins School of Medicine pointed out in Scientific American, we in fact use virtually every part of our brain almost all the time. And yet, there is little doubt that there is much about the function of the brain that isn't known, let alone the workings of the quantum mechanical processes that underpin it on a subatomic level. And though we might not ordinarily have the ability to manipulate spaces around us with thoughts alone, thanks to a number of recent developments in neurotechnology, such a thing may well one day be available to all. Already, companies such as Neurable and Elon Musk's Neuralink are developing ways to measure patterns of electrical brain activity in order to enact physical actions with thought alone. And Facebook are currently developing a system that detects chemical changes in the brain in the hope that it might one day be used to convert our thoughts into type. Such developments are likely only to become more sophisticated and more integrated into our bodies. It might not be exactly what we had in mind, but one way or another, psychokinesis could be coming to us all. If you enjoy listening to Unexplained and would like to help support us, you can now go to unexplainedpodcast.com/support. All donations, no matter how large or small, are massively appreciated. All elements of Unexplained are produced by me, Richard McLean Smith. Please subscribe and rate the show on iTunes, and feel free to get in touch with any thoughts or ideas regarding the stories you've heard on the show. Perhaps you have an explanation of your own you'd like to share. You can reach us online at unexplainedpodcast.com or Twitter at unexplainedpod and Facebook at facebook.com/unexplained. There are over 2 million burglaries reported in the US every year, yet only 1 in 5 homes have home security. Maybe because most companies don't make it easy. That's why SimpliSafe is different. SimpliSafe protects your whole home, every window, room and door, with 24/7 monitoring for just a fraction of the cost. Visit simplisafe.com/unexplainedpodcast and get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial today. That's Simply, spelt SimpliSafe.com/unexplainedpodcast.